This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
Joe DeSena is an entrepreneur, an ultra-endurance athlete, an adventurer, the founder of the Spartan Race, now sponsored by Reebok, and the author of Spartan Up, a take-no-prisoners guide to overcoming obstacles and achieving peak performance in life. Joe has literally always been in the arena. I invited him here to speak about starting the Spartan Race, ultra events, discomfort and growth, and what you can learn by stretching yourself beyond your comfort zone. Joe is an interesting guy, and we range all over the place from organized crime to having babies. You're going to love this. Here we go, in the arena with Joe DeSena.
Hey, Joe, what's happening?
How you doing?
I'm wonderful, man. Where are you today?
So I'm in Vermont. I haven't been around very much because of this book. I've just been on the road doing these interviews and so forth, and I get very little time with the kids, so I just convinced my 8-year-old. We have a 500-mile race that takes place on my farm every year, and runners are in the middle of it, and so I want my kids to see those people suffer. I think it's good for them, and I just convinced him to race up the mountain and see what, you know, how fast could he make it straight up a mountain. It's about 1 mile, and so he just made it up in 18:05, which is pretty good time. And then he got to see one of the runners at the top who's 200 miles into their 500 miles. And then we just raced back to make this Skype interview.
That's crazy. He's 8 years old and he's already being indoctrinated into the Spartan way.
Yeah. You know, kids have to see it. Like when I grew up, the thing I was seeing was organized crime. And so I want him to see things. I want him to see people push through adversity, right? And runners and triathletes and Spartan racers. And I just want it to become part of his fabric. And I think it's already happening.
It's so great to start a podcast when I was his age, I saw organized crime. How can you go wrong from there? It's a great starting off point. Let's share a little bit about your story leading up to the Spartan Race. Tell me a little bit, tell the audience here your backstory.
So 8 years old, funny enough, just like my son, grew up in the center of Goodfellas in Queens. Pretty much the boss of every organized crime family lived within a square, 2 mile square. And there's 5,000 homes in this town we grew up in. And so you get focused on people that are breaking the law and making lots of money, and everybody's afraid of them. And at the same time, they love them and want to be around them. And I immediately found myself selling fireworks at 8 and making money. I used to make 3 cents a pack when I sold a pack of firecrackers. And then all hell broke loose. My dad started to lose a bunch of money, got in trouble. My mom divorced him, moved to Ithaca, New York. And so I found myself smuggling fireworks into her car whenever she would drive down to New York so that we could see our dad. And what I found in Ithaca, New York, where she moved us to, was that the laws of supply and demand were amazing for an 8-year-old. There were tons of children that wanted fireworks, just like New York, but there was no supply. So I was able to raise prices to $1 a pack and quickly make, you know, 90 cents a pack where I was making 3 cents before. And so, I don't know if you remember the old speakers that we all used to have in our houses where they had a hole in them for one of the elements of the speaker was a hole. And I used to just stick the money in the hole every day until the speaker was busting with dollar bills. And they caught me. They got me. And the way they got me was lunch back then was $1, and no one was buying lunch anymore. Lunch sales had plummeted firework sales were through the roof, and so I got in trouble.
I kept my contraband in speakers too, mostly guitar amps, or you could take the panel off of the light or the electrical outlet and you stuff the contraband in there. Great childhood memories. And tell us from there, you've had a number of entrepreneurial adventures, construction company, and then you went into, you found out that that was a little bit more work for less money than you could do in finance. What was that journey like?
So fast forward. So my dad continues to lose everything. And my father's neighbor, I must have been 11 or 12. My father's neighbor was head of the Bonanno organized crime family. And he turns to me and he says, "Hey, kid, why don't you clean my pool? I'll pay you $35 a week." He knew what we were going through. He knew my parents were divorced. So he gave me the opportunity. And I didn't know who he was. You know, I didn't understand that business at that time. And so I started cleaning his pool, and then he gave me the head of the Lucchese family. And before you know it, I had 750 customers. And the reason it grew like wildfire was they trusted me in their backyard. Everybody was using the same guy. And so, whatever, it worked. And before you know it, they started asking me, because I was already in the backyard, "Hey, can you do some brickwork? Can you do some, can you fix a window? Can you fix my roof?" And so I had these two big businesses. By the time I graduated college, I had paid my way through college, and I really didn't want a job anywhere because I was making great money. I met a great girl, and I found myself in Queens on top of the world at, 22 years old. And so now I'm about 25, fast forward 3 years, and somebody I had met in college who was older, who took a liking to me, says, starts calling me. And I, again, I'm not really staying in touch because I'm in Queens. He's in Ithaca, this guy. He had graduated 25 years earlier. And he says, you gotta get out of this. You gotta get out of Queens. You gotta get out of the construction business and you gotta go to Wall Street. And I'm thinking, nobody makes money on Wall Street. I remembered the 87 crash. I never really invested in stocks. And he continued to pound me. He would call religiously once a month and say, "Joe, trust me. I know you met this girl. I know you're thinking you're going to get married and have this family and you're on top of the world, but you're not even close. And you need to get on the other side of the river. You need to get to Manhattan." And one day he convinces me to buy a stock. Again, I was making money at this time. And so I buy the stock, and the stock goes up the next day. It doubles. And I made a lot of money. And I thought, I got to get out of construction. I got to go to Wall Street. This is unbelievable. And so that was it. I took my plunge. I was late to the game because at that point, I'm 25, 26 years old. Most of the kids that had gotten jobs were right out of school, got classically trained. They had no formal training program for a pool guy. I still had a beeper on my belt. I was definitely out of my element. But what it did was it made me look at the business in a way that nobody else was looking at it. It just didn't seem to make sense to me the way they were running their business. And at this point, I had a bunch of business experience, even though it wasn't in the same industry. And so I attempted, again, lack of knowledge sometimes is a good thing. I attempted to start my own firm. And in the late 90s, started up my own firm and was on the brink of going out of business, because what institution would possibly do business with a pool construction guy from Queens? And then my life changed one day. A friend from college called up with an order, "Hey, buy me 200,000 shares of XYZ stock," and that was it. Just like what happened in the pool business happened on Wall Street. All of a sudden, he recommended 25 customers, and we were off to the races. So, just fast forwarding, I had this vision from a very early age when my parents got divorced that I was going to make money. I was then going to start a family. And I was going to make sure the pressure that my dad had, I didn't have. And so I was crushing it. I got into these adventure races. And I met a girl who's now my wife at an adventure race. And we fell in love fast and got married. And I said, what? This business is for the birds. I'm going to Vermont. And so we moved to Vermont. We just had four children over the last 8 years. My oldest, I was describing to you, is 8, and I'm knock on wood, I'm blessed, and we got a great life.
You know how you keep having these babies, right?
Do I know why I keep having the babies? I run a lot.
No, do you know how? I mean, at some point, four is a lot, isn't it?
You know, when we met, I had very few girlfriends growing up, but the ones I had, I kept for a long time just because it was easier. I didn't have time to go searching. And with my wife, our first date was purposely an 8-hour kayak. And I did that because I wanted to trap her on the boat and really just discuss everything with her. And just, I figured by the time you're done with 8 hours on a kayak, she either likes you or, you know, or you guys will never speak again. And, purposely didn't bring any water or food. And, on that kayak, we talked about, hey, how many kids would you have? How many kids would you have? And 7 was the number. So she's ready to go. I mean, we could bang out another three and have 7, but I don't know. And maybe we'll adopt them. I think it's probably socially the right thing to do is to adopt them rather than keep having babies ourselves.
I always have to ask if you know how that happens when you get to the number 4, but apparently you do. And 7's a big number. What we would expect from you, the little time I've known you. Let me go back and talk about the end of your journey though, in the world of finance, because you and I had one conversation prior to this, and I told you about my ultra experience riding a bike 162 miles across Death Valley. And I asked you the question, why do we test ourselves with these ultra endurance events like Spartan, your creation? What is it that caused you to start entering the ultra events? And you shared with me before, you know, what you perceived other people in the finance industry generally, what they were like. And then you described why you think we test ourselves with events like this. What is that?
Yeah. So for me, and it's funny, I was talking to my cousin about it yesterday. I like to get back to the core of who I am. And it's funny. I told you, we just ran up the mountain, me and my 8-year-old son. Well, a friend of ours, Don, came with us. And Don, if Spartan was the Grateful Dead, Don would be one of the groupies. He's an older guy and he's going through some relationship issues. He's been divorced twice and he jumped on the trail with me and my son and said, hey, I got to go clear my head. And so to your question, there's something that feels really good about just getting to your core essence and all the noise and the BS, getting it away from yourself. So on Wall Street and in business in general and in life in general, when you're in the suburbs or in a city, you get so caught up in what's going on every day. And most of it is BS. It doesn't mean anything. But yet it stresses you out. It consumes your life. When you go and do one of these events like you did across that valley, you hit a place where all you want is water, food, and shelter. And when you get to that place, I know when I get to that place, it's a great place to be, right? It just gets you back to your roots. And I think that's why I like to go back there. Certainly the 500-mile runners that are in my backyard right now, that's where they're going. And there's something powerful about it.
It's people are softer now because we're so comfortable though. We have no kind of discomfort and survival, you know, at some base level like that is never threatened. And so maybe we're in these events because that does take us to maybe our ancestry, our paleo history, you know, of being built to be tested and pushed and to grow. And we don't have those experiences physically anymore at all, do we? Unless we put ourselves in those positions.
Yeah. So let's go along. Let's use an analogy for what you just said. Like if you took coal and you put coal on a pillow and gave it a nice comfortable life, it wouldn't turn into diamonds. It's only when you put coal under enormous pressure does it turn into diamonds. And we don't grow in comfort. Comfort stunts growth. So when you take yourself out, like you did, like the runners are, like I do, of that comfortable environment, We grow. It feels good, right? There's a physical imprint that occurs in the brain during those adverse moments. And that doesn't happen watching TV and eating popcorn. You know, most cultures have rites of passage. We don't have that anymore in the United States. And, you know, if I had my way, this would be a different country. We'd do things a lot differently.
Well, we could talk about the Spartan race. Tell us about the race. And tell us about that experience. What do people get out of testing themselves and going through your creation here, the Spartan Race?
they transform. They transform, and it's almost like we have an enormous experiment that spans 17 countries and 1 million participants. They email us all day, every day, and say, "You changed my life." And I'm thinking, we didn't change their life. We just provided this platform for them to change their own lives. And the only reason that's happening is because they're stepping out of their comfort zones, right? And they're forcing themselves to start delay gratification, not grab that extra glass of wine at night, wake up a little earlier, go for that mile walk. Without this platform, without being excited and having this goal of completing a Spartan race, they wouldn't have the motivation. You can't, a gym membership doesn't give you motivation. If it did, we wouldn't have the obesity rates we have. You've got to have your neck on the line. You've got to make a commitment. You've got to do it publicly. And Spartan Race does that. And it's different.
Tell me about the race itself, though. What are you in for when you sign up for the Spartan Race?
You're going to war. You're going to war. This is a military, you know, tested battlefield where you're going to be crawling under barbed wire. You're going over 8-foot walls. You're jumping over fire. You're throwing spears. We're giving you everything we can to rip you out of your comfort zone. And they don't sound like life and death obstacles I just described, but they make you very, very uncomfortable for a reason.
When you start saying jumping through fire, it does start to make you question, what am I doing here?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people will say, "Joe, you're not normal. This is not normal." I would argue I'm normal. No one else is. This is the way an animal's supposed to live. You know, my dog is 3 feet from me right now. She's happy as can be on her little padded pillow, but she could use a psychologist at the same time, right? She's like sitting here and comfortable, but at the same time, a little depressed. You take her outside and she runs around in the grass. She chases a bird. She gets wet. She gets muddy. She's happier.
There's a difference from exercising inside and outside, though, isn't there? I mean,
studies approve. Yeah, physiologically, you take me and you, we do the exact same workout inside versus outside. We get better results outside.
Why do you think that is? Nature, we were made for it?
We're made for it. We're animals. You may not want to believe you're an animal, but we're animals. We're not meant to be wrapped up in tight clothing that looks beautiful at cocktail parties. That's not what we're meant to do. We're meant to be at events like Spartan Race.
Tell me what you think. We've talked about this before, but this idea of comfort. Why is comfort so dangerous for human beings and discomfort so beneficial? Because that's what this is about. It's about really stepping out of that. I'm warm. I'm safe. I'm in my bed. I'm comfortable. I've got the TV on. And then getting yourself into a place where you're totally, I mean, crawling through mud under barbed wire in the rain is about the most uncomfortable thing you can think of. But that's what people sign up to do. Why is comfort so dangerous?
First of all, comfort stunts growth. So we've been on this this mission of seeking comfort for probably as long as we've been on the planet. But recently, you know, the last 10, 15 generations have gotten more and more comfortable. And thus we've gotten weaker and weaker. And that's why you hear comments like, "Oh, my God, this new generation doesn't want to work." Because they're in these very comfortable environments that are more comfortable than the last generation. Think about the guy that came out of the Depression or anybody that came out of war. They're just more rugged. They've got more grit. They've got more tenacity. They work harder. And that comes from being uncomfortable. That doesn't come from watching TV and eating popcorn. So I would say comfort breeds, you know, a gross, stunting environment, whereas uncomfortable, and by the way, we're not even talking about the physiological benefits of being on the couch watching TV versus being outside and sweating and breathing heavy, right? Think about all the chemicals that get released into your brain, like yours when you biked across Death Valley. It's like a drugstore in your head. I mean, it's for a reason, right? That there's a reason why that feels good, because we want our creator, whoever that is, no matter what you believe in, want us to repeat that. We should repeat that over and over. We shouldn't be repeating sitting on the couch.
Yeah, I've asked you before about Taleb's Anti-Fragile. He talks about that in such a compelling way about it's not about being robust and bouncing back. It's about being anti-fragile. And really, every uncomfortable thing that you can do is what causes you to grow. And everything that you do to avoid that discomfort causes you to get weaker. You're not actually maintaining the status quo. You're getting weaker by not exercising. You're losing muscle mass, bone density. And he talks a lot about paleo and fasting and sometimes eating just vegan because that's sort of how you were designed. And every time you put yourself in those situations, you're getting stronger, not weaker. And people that avoid them are actually getting weaker.
I agree 100%. And it's not easy. It's not easy for me. It's probably not easy for you. You've got to fight it, the urge every day to just hang out indoors, right? That's easier. But armed with the knowledge that you just described, that should force us to get outside. And if that doesn't do it, that's why I like this whole idea of just committing and committing publicly, because that'll force you to get outside and get in shape. Once you've told all your friends, hey, I'm doing this, whatever this is.
That's the commitment. I mean, when you make it to Spartan, you're going to get ready because it's going to be there waiting for you, and you have to be ready. You don't have a choice. Let me ask you about the race itself, and let's just talk about, because really what you've done is you've set up the Spartan race, and it is sort of a metaphor for life. It's how you engage with your life. How do people begin to prepare themselves for something like Spartan? How do they get off of the couch and get ready to do an event like this?
Well, let's hit both ends of the spectrum. Let's start with the couch potato. The couch potato, first of all, has to commit, like we just said, has to do it publicly, has to tell friends, family, I'm doing this. Let them see the video. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a Spartan race. I don't want this to be a Spartan race commercial. It could be anything. It could be a marathon, a 5K. The reason Spartan race works better is because it's so scary for you and your friends that it forces you to get outside and start training. You can fake a 5K, you can fake a marathon, you can't fake this. So so now you've committed, and at one end of the spectrum, you can do as little as, you know, 1 mile a day. If you get out there and run a mile a day, if you did 30 burpees a day and 30 pull-ups, you could hobble your way through a Spartan race. On the other end of the spectrum, you want to win this thing, you're training pretty hard. You're putting in 25, 30-hour weeks. And I talk to the elites. We have a whole elite team, and the kind of training they're doing is pretty serious stuff. So they're running, you know, 5, 8, 9 miles a day. They're doing, you know, 150, 200 burpees a day. They're doing pull-ups. They're doing CrossFit. They're working pretty hard.
I'm fine with the 1 mile. That's easy. And I'm fine with the burpees, even though that's about the hardest exercise I think you can think of. I know it's your favorite for that reason, but when you get to pull-ups, I'm lost. That's the toughest exercise ever.
Get a rubber band, you know, those big rubber bands they sell, and wrap it around the bar and then put it around your feet and get yourself some help via the rubber band, because they don't have to be perfect, but you'd be surprised what happens just doing 30 a day.
Like anything
else. It takes some time. Yeah. Yeah. You'd be surprised.
I've got one more question. I guess this is sort of, I learned a whole bunch of things riding a bicycle, and I learned that you just have to keep pedaling. And when that voice starts to tell you that you can't go on any further, you really can just ignore that voice. It's not right. It's just telling you that you're really seeking comfort rather than more suffering and more pain, but you could just keep going. And I learned how not to cram. I think that's probably the most important lesson I learned is you can't cram success. And I would miss workouts. And I had a coach who would tell me, stop trying to make up the hours that you missed during the week on the weekend, because you're not doing yourself any favors. You're not helping yourself. It's not the same as training. And I see a lot of people who want to cram everything. They just want to cram the results that they want. They're not willing to do the 1 hour a day or the 45 minutes, or like you said, the 1 mile and 30 burpees. What lessons have you learned through the Spartan race as both somebody who's a participant in ultra events, but also as a business person who is providing this experience to other people?
You know, the number one question we get asked is, how do you stay motivated? And it is, like I said, it's hard for me, probably you as your listeners. And there's a great speech that just came out of Admiral McRaven, to, I believe, University of Texas. He gave the graduating class a speech, and he was a Navy SEAL. He's our most highest ranking officer right now. He runs special forces across all special forces. And he said something that really struck home the last few days as I listened to the speech. He said they used to make him wake up, you know, whether it was 4 a.m., 3 a.m., 5 a.m., and the first thing they had to do before anything was make their bed. And he said the reason that's relevant is it seems like a silly task, but forcing you to make your bed perfectly in the morning gets you then done with one task and on to the next task. And it just starts this movement of getting tasks completed during the day. And so to answer your question, like, I love to wake up and my first task is I got to get my 300 burpees done. They suck. They're terrible. They never get better.
Hang on. We got a bad connection here because I thought you said 300 burpees.
I did say 300 burpees.
You are mentally insane.
That's my daily routine every morning. And you're gonna hate me. And I'm sure social services is going to show up at my house. But the last 3 or 4 days, I've been home. And I haven't been home often. And my kids have been doing them with me. And it's not, you know, I'm not pointing a gun at them. I'm just asking them, hey, guys, want to do 300 burpees with me? And they're banging them out. So, and my five-year-old daughter is in there in that group.
I think the father of award, the father of the year award is right around the corner for you.
Either that, my wife says, or they're going to turn out to be crazy CIA agents or something.
Something, yeah. That's funny. So the motivation.
But I think.
Talk about the motivation.
Yeah. I think it starts by just starting. As silly as that sounds, it starts with the first step. And so at night before I go to bed, I make that commitment again. Tomorrow morning, I'm waking up, I'm doing this. Any chance I get, I tell people I'm doing it, like I'm telling you right now and your listeners. So now I'm even on the hook further because I don't want to do them tomorrow. And I don't want to do them the day after, but I got to do them because I said I'm doing them. And that's where it starts.
This, for me, you know, I never want to exercise. When I was training for a bike ride, I'm training to run right now. But when I was training for a bike ride, man, the first 4 or 5 miles on the bike were always miserable. And I used to tell people the hardest climb I ever did on a bike was the one where I put my leg over the bar to get started. But it's just getting started. Once you're in and you've got 5, 8 miles under you, then it's just easy once you get going. It's that initial getting past that inertia and getting started. What number burpee does that happen for you? Where are you when you're like, okay, I'm okay doing these burpees now?
You know, it's funny. I thought about that this morning. I don't think about that very often, but just this morning I thought of that. And I think it's 10. Like literally this morning I got to 10. And I thought, all right, here we go. We're in. One is hard. And like you said, going from the bed to number one is hard. But once you're at 10, you're like, all right, I'm almost at 30, which is 10%. And you start doing the math in your head and you get to 90 and you just get there. You just get it done.
That's amazing. I'm going to leave with this. You just shared with me the book is going to be number 2 on the New York Times bestseller.
We just found out yesterday we hit number 2 and I'm super psyched. I didn't think anybody would read a book that I wrote. And so this is unbelievable.
The book is Spartan Up, A Take No Prisoners Guide to Overcoming Obstacles and Achieving Peak Performance in Life. And there couldn't be anybody better to write this book than Joe, as you've just heard here. Joe, where do people go to find out about you and to learn more about the Spartan Race?
Just Spartan.com. We'll give you that info.
Spartan.com will get you there. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
He is Joe DeSena, and you can find him at Spartan.com. Do pick up the book Spartan Up, A Take No Prisoner's Guide to Overcoming Obstacles and Achieving Peak Performance in Life. I am Anthony Anarino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com. Do sign up for the newsletter. It's the best work I produce each week, and it will start your Monday right. Until then, I'll see you next week in the arena.